Hey, Bobby Manning here. Welcome to Dome Theory 62. Chase Hughes is the guest. We talked to him between the Wizards games last week about the Wizards, how they're thinking about the Celtics down in D.C., a little Bradley Beal, Jason Tatum talk, as it looks like Washington's getting good after the Russell Westbrook trade and maybe making Beal that much more comfortable and sticking around D.C. for the future. It certainly seems like he's going to sign that long-term extension here and take things from there. Also, gonna look back at our over-unders selections, looking amazing so far in a competitive East. The East looks so good to start this year. I was wondering when the last time it was this good. Chase agreed that maybe it's the 1990s. Might have to go back that far for this deep of an East, and it's not going to stay this competitive 12, 13 deep all the way. But I do think there's that many deep teams on paper, competitive teams, before injury strike and all the other stuff we always see throughout the course of a year. Over-unders, we got them at betonline.ag preseason, and they're looking good so far. Nets under 56.5. They've been off to a disappointing start. Jazz over. Feels like they're going to win every game this year, this regular season. Suns under, they got off to a rough start, as did the 76ers. Not quite on pace for 50.5 yet. Feeling good about that one. Warriors under, not so much. Heat under, they look amazing. Dallas under, not on track, but I do like it the way Luke is playing to start this year. Nuggets over, they're not quite on track. The Hawks are. Celtics under, looking good. Clippers under, looking great to me. Pacers under, not so much. Knicks over, love it. Grizzlies over, love it. Pelicans under, love it. Hornets over, Raptors under. We'll see. I like the Raptors beating that out. 35.5 if it ends up happening. They've been so fun to watch. Them and the Cavs, so surprising in the East so far this year. There's not going to be any easy games in the East outside of maybe Detroit, who is easily going under. And the Magic. Cavs over looks good. Rockets under looks good. Pistons under looks good. Spurs under. Wizards over. I mean, they're already like 29 from hitting that with like 70 games to go. That one looks like a lock. Timberwolves over, looking really good too. 34.5. Kings over, 35.5. Those were so low. And Thunder under. I bet 99% of bettors were going Thunder under, and they still might get it. BetOnline.ag, that's where we got these. For now, still great night-to-night action. You got the Bulls plus 2.5 over the Celtics, the way the Celtics have been playing lately. I like the sound of that one. Wizards, who beat the Hawks, getting 5.5 in Atlanta in the rematch. Knicks minus 7 against the Raptors. They've been so good. 76ers at home, where they're so good, minus 2 against the Blazers. No Embiid, though, so you might lean Blazers in that case, but Tobias Harris can still carry them. Clippers minus 12.5 against the Thunder. I am not giving up that many points against the Thunder, who have actually been sneaky cover machines early this year with how many points they get. I don't want to say machines, but they've been covering. And of course, we got NHL hockey, we got NFL football. It's all over on betonline.ag. The new site looks amazing, whether you look at the mobile or the desktop edition. Easy to navigate, series, futures, props. You can tab between all of them on the left side, as well as different sports, soccer, golf, horse racing, as well as your Vegas casino games that your favorite. It's all on the new improved betonline.ag. Boxing, UFC, all continuing. And don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite sports. And support CLNS Media while you do it. Dome Theory, Garden Report, all the rest. Use the code CLNS50 for 50% back. A welcome bonus on your first deposit. You know how it goes, $100, $50 back, free to play on betonline.ag. Just use the promo code CLNS50, BetOnline, where the game starts. We're going to talk to Chase Hughes here on Dome Theory number 62. Subscribe on Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, all the rest. And we'll catch you later this week to talk about the Miami Heat, who are suddenly becoming maybe the dangerous, underrated favorite in the East early on this season. Jimmy Butler, first in the basketball reference page when you look at MVP favorites right now. And Tyler Hero, maybe a most improved favorite, as the Celtics off to a 2-4 start, going to be heading down to Orlando later this week, as well as Miami in a back-to-back. We'll check in on the Florida road trip and continue to keep tabs on the Celtics here, as well as do some other interviews as well as the season rolls on here. Keep sticking with us on the Garden Report, CLNS Media, where I'm covering the Celtics this season in a beat role, as well as my national NBA role with Boston Sports Journal. Got lots of stuff going on, and I'll be live at quite a few of these games this year, so keep it locked at Real Bob Manning, at Celtics CLNS, and at Dome Theory for everything going on. Here is Chase Hughes. Hey, Bobby Manning here. We are live. Good morning, everybody. It is a new, fresh edition of Dome Theory. And here he's sharing some of his theories on Celtics, NBA, early start, and a really grueling Eastern Conference, which I'm really excited to dig into and watch throughout this season. We've seen bits of it between the Celtics and Hornets on this side. We saw a really tough game between the Hawks and Wizards that the Wizards were able to pull out yesterday. And really, there's 12 so far really quality teams on paper and, you know, through their records to start this NBA season. So I'm going to dig a little bit into this Wizards-Celtics miniseries here. Of course, the NBA schedule, being as wacky as it is, has the Wizards playing 3 games in 4 days through it, and the Celtics getting 2 days off here between the two games. He is Chase Hughes, covers the Wizards for NBC Sports Washington. Been meaning to get him on here for a long time, just because the Celtics and Wizards have been pretty interconnected the last couple of years. They had that playing game last year, early series here. They had a couple of these miniseries last year as well. And it's been really fun, obviously, watching Jason Tatum and Bradley Beal go at it as they reach their primes here. So welcome in, Chase. I want to give the people a little background on how you ended up at NBC Sports Washington covering the Wizards. And I know you're a Virginia native, just kind of growing up in that area.
Yeah, first of all, thanks a lot for having me on. I know we've tried to do this before, and it just hasn't worked out with our schedule. So we're finally making it happen, and that's good. I'm from Virginia. I went to college at the College of Charleston in South Carolina, and I thought I wanted to go to law school and like work in politics, and I studied it and realized I didn't want to do that. So late in college, I got, you know, a sports internship, and I turned that very luckily into an internship at then CSN Washington, just by sending an email to a random email address, and they were looking for interns, and I got in. I had no idea what I was doing, but I figured it out and worked extremely hard, and here I am 12 years later covering the team that, you know, I grew up watching. I was a Wizards fan, you know, back in the day with, I mean, even before Gilbert Arenas, but that Gilbert Arenas era with Caron Butler and Antoine Jameson, that was my team. And, you know, next thing I knew, I was in the locker room with those guys. And obviously it didn't work out for them, but it's worked out for me. So I'm having fun covering the NBA, and it's good to be talking with you.
Well, I'm intrigued by this Wizards team, and it was a great game the other night, a weird game, missed layups. You had that Bradley Beal double missed layup in the halftime. You had Denny missing a dunk in that game, I believe, and that was last night, actually. Denny missed the dunk with
he's been doing that all season so far.
And he's been a weird rookie. There have been a couple interesting picks over the last couple of years with the Wizards, but I remember going in the last year, or last offseason, listening to Tommy Shepard say, we have so much flexibility this offseason. We're going to be able to do a lot of different things. And I'm like, what? Like the cap? I'm not going to pretend to be a better GM than Tommy Shepard, but I'm going in there saying like, all right, they're all capped out. They got these two massive contracts between Beal and Westbrook, and really just not a lot of flexibility at the edges of the roster. But they had one of the more busy off seasons of anybody in the league. And they effectively took that whole role championship core from the Lakers, plus Montrezl Harrell, and moved Russell Westbrook out, which was a bold move. And normally you don't think the team that's trading the star is going to end up winning a deal in the NBA, but I think there's a real chance here, and we're seeing the early returns on it, because they just got so many good quality rotation players back from the Lakers in that deal.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, because I don't think that was the original plan. You know, I got that sense talking to people in the front office that they wanted to build around Russell Westbrook and Bradley Beal. And there was kind of some gray areas, but what really told me that their plan was to build around Russell Westbrook was what their owner or their team chairman, Ted Leonsis, said to ESPN, actually in an article about the NHL. He was talking about Alex Ovechkin going into the season, and he made a comparison between the NHL and the NBA, saying, you know, they're just different leagues. And there was a lot of backlash because people were like, well, you can't complain about player empowerment in the NBA, but that's a separate issue. But basically what he said is, you know, he wanted to keep Russell Westbrook, and Russell Westbrook saw this opportunity to go to the Lakers, and the Wizards granted him that request, and I think they made the most of it. And, you know, whether it was their original plan or not, I think they came out really well on the other end because they became much deeper. They became a better defensive team. Their salary cap is much more even now. They still got a guy on a max contract in Bradley Beal, but they got a bunch of good players on mid-level contracts and just way more flexibility than they've had in a long time. Really, more flexibility, I would say, since the 2016 offseason when they made a disaster of a decision to sign Jan Mahimi to a four-year, $64 million deal.
It was the Horford backup plan.
Yeah, oh yeah, exactly. A wild finish. You know, the Celtics got Al Horford, and that was plan C because the Wizards
wanted
Kevin
Durant. Oh, that would have
changed
the Wizards if they got Horford, you know, when you look at the couple of seasons he had after that.
Oh, my God. He was great. He was great in Boston. So they did that, and then the next offseason, they gave John Wall a Supermax deal. He was coming off his best year. I think it was very defensible to give him that contract at the time. No one could have known his body would break down the way it did. But what was completely indefensible, I argued at the time, and it's very obvious in hindsight, they gave a max contract to Otto Porter Jr., who was the third overall pick, but never lived up to that billing. And they let a guy go in Bojan Bogdanovic, who has been not just better, significantly better since. So they just completely blundered two off seasons, and it left them with 5 years of salary cap hell. And finally they got out of it. And if you just trace these steps going back to the John Wall deal, when he's coming off a torn Achilles and he has a Supermax contract, you trade him for Westbrook, and now you see what you have now. It's pretty remarkable what they've done.
And it's pretty remarkable they've kept Bradley Beal so happy. And we'll get to kind of his standing in DC sports in a little bit. But I do want your thoughts on the Celtics offseason by contrast. They were pretty active in their own right. They lost Fournier after making that trade deadline deal for him. Brought back Horford, as we mentioned him, through a Kemba Walker deal there, dumping Kemba Walker to Oklahoma City with a first. And kind of reshaping the roster around big guys, a lot of size here, bigger point guard and Marcus Smart, who has really struggled in that role to open up this season on the offensive end, remains as competitive defensively as we saw him shutting down Beal for large stretches of that game. But he has really struggled to command this offense and shoot as he always does. And Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, it's been a mixed bag, and that's largely how it was last year for this team. They just put a massive load on these two. They do some amazing things, as we saw in the comeback against Charlotte earlier this week with 41 and 30, respectively. But these guys just are carrying this enormous weight again, it seems, in this team. A couple of first-round picks from 2019 that haven't developed all that well, and some deeper guys who really haven't broken the rotation yet. Look like a pretty thin team so far, and almost kind of an awkward team on the offensive end with a double big lineup and, you know, some guards who can't really shoot here. So I actually came out of the offseason feeling pretty good about how Boston reshaped its roster around defense and size, but something just still seems so disjointed about this group, and they just have really struggled for large stretches to space the floor and, you know, play and make and do different things with the lineups that they have out there. What sticks out about them to you?
Well, first of all, just the change with Brad Stevens and Danny Ainge, that took me by surprise from the seat I'm sitting in. And, you know, Brad Stevens going to the front office, so I'm sure you guys are just looking at the early returns, wondering what type of executive he's going to be. The Dennis Schroeder deal, you know, considering the price, I thought was great.
I don't know where they'd be without him so far.
Yeah, I think he's been an underrated player. He played terrific against the Wizards, of course. Josh Richardson's a guy who I've liked for a long time, but he's inconsistent. I mean, he's only 28, so we'll see what comes from that. But I see a team that I think is going to ultimately be pretty good because they've got Tatum and Jaylen Brown, and Jaylen Brown's one of the most underrated players in the NBA, and Jason Tatum is one of the best players in the NBA, I mean, at least one of the best scorers, and a guy who I think has all-time great potential. I would bet on him being an all-time great. I think he's that good offensively. He's just completely unstoppable, and he's so young. But what's interesting is I just think they don't know their identity yet. You know, one thing that stood out to me before they played the Wizards, I was looking at their stats. They're taking a ton of threes. They were taking the most threes in the NBA at the time. It was like 11 more than per game than last season. So I think they're trying to figure some things out. I don't know if they're going to be a team that shoots as many threes as like the Brooklyn Nets and the Houston Rockets have become famous for. I think they got to kind of figure out what they are. And obviously they're playing under a new head coach, so it might take some time. That's what's kind of made the Wizards start so surprising, because they had so many new players and they have a new head coach. But Wes Unseld Jr. Has just been so impressive so far. He's done a great job coming over from Denver and just adding structure and adding defensive discipline. I think it's been really, really refreshing for Wizards fans to see. And I think Ime Udoka will be a good coach. But as you're seeing, not every new head coach just hits the ground running like that.
You mentioned Richardson. Obviously, I've seen a lot of him through the East with Philly and Miami. And then last year, it didn't work all that well with Dallas. He's been an interesting player. A good defender, kind of a combo guard, ball handler. Struggled to shoot the last couple of years and doesn't seem like all that great of a shooter from that position if you're just looking at the total in his career. But he was so good in Miami to start his career, the second round pick there, and was a big part of that, you know, probably mediocre team. You can look back and say after LeBron left, but he has just kind of not been able to catch on anywhere, but you still have some hope for him.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it's just because of the way he played in Miami. You know, he was a really good defensive player. He was so young. The way he took to that end of the floor so quickly, I thought was pretty rare for a player of his age. And, you know, the shooting percentages were concerning early on, but, you know, you thought, okay, well, he's like 24 years old. Maybe he'll figure it out. And there was a trajectory that I was encouraged by. He just seemed to be perfect for what Miami does and how Miami plays under Eric Spoelstra. And I don't think he's been able to find the right fit ever since. You know, maybe in Boston, maybe Brad Stevens sees him as a guy who could become like what Avery Bradley used to be for them. I don't know if anyone's made that comparison. Maybe it's become a cliche at this point. I don't know. Yeah. I'm not listening to everyone, but that would be kind of, I think, the hope from my perspective, is that he can just be a defensive specialist and maybe develop an offensive game where he can at least be a threat from the outside. You know, it's not unheard of for someone in their late 20s to do that, but you know, bouncing around from team to team certainly can't help with him trying to settle his career.
Yeah, the tricky thing, too, for fitting in for him, and this isn't his fault, is that there's just not that shooting next to him in the backcourt. Smart, his shooting kind of speaks for itself at this point in his career, and Dennis Schroeder has really only had one good shooting career season in his career, that six-man candidate year that he had in Oklahoma City. So he has not looked great from deep on this roster either. Horford has struggled in that regard when he used to, and really the last couple of years has been a pretty good shooter at that four position, five position relative to the other bigs in this league. He's been great there and hasn't been able to get to go so far this year. They've really scrapped together some three-point shooting from weird spots. A few good Schroeder games. Jabari Parker has stunningly nailed his threes early this year when they've gone to him. There's some Grant Williams is one of the best three-point shooters in the league statistically to start this year. So just some stunning spacing candidates to start the year with the Celtics team, which worries me because I'll probably tail off with some of those guys. I've read a little bit about kind of your reaction to this Wizards start, 4-1, tied for the one seed in the East. You still think the Celtics could have a decent season? When you look at those two teams, if you had to make a pick right now, gun to your head, who's going to have the better season between these two teams, the Wizards and the Celtics?
Oh, that's a really good question. You know, the Wizards, things are so new. It's like game to game. We're learning so much about them. And they've had such an interesting start to the season because they've played like all teams that I think could make the playoffs in the Eastern Conference. They haven't played a bad team. So it's like they played the lower level fringe playoff teams. Like
there aren't many bad teams in the East, like three.
Oh, I know. It's the deepest I think the East has been maybe in decades, to be honest.
If you had to think back to a year that it was this good, like what would you?
I mean, I haven't looked it up, but I think it's possible, like in terms of sustainability, you might have to go back to like the 90s, like to be honest.
That's what I was thinking.
Like, because the Western Conference has been better ever since Michael Jordan retired from the Bulls the second time, right? Immediately the Lakers took over, and the Western Conference has always been better than the East every single step of the way. Even when LeBron was with the Heat and the Cavs, it was always the inferior conference. But so the Wizards, they played the Nets. They just beat the Celtics and the Hawks, two teams that going into the season I thought would be better than them. So the Wizards might be better than I thought. But right now, I think I'd probably give the edge still to Boston a little bit, just because I think the Tatum and Brown combo over the course of the season is going to separate them. And, you know, I think the Wizards right now, my read on them is that they're going to win a good amount of regular season games. But in the playoffs, the fact that they've got one star and every other team that they're going to face, for the most part, it's got multiple stars. They kind of lack size. I don't know as constituted how well they are built for the playoffs. So I think Boston's better built for the playoffs because they've got two stars. You know, maybe that sounds reductive, but Jason Tatum is absolutely amazing. I mean, we of course saw him score 50 against the Wizards in the play-in tournament, and him scoring 23 the other night and shooting 9 for 22 against the Wizards, I think was a fluke. So I'd give the Boston, I think, a slight edge. But right now, the Wizards are going in the season. I thought they'd be the 8th seed. Now I'm starting to think maybe they could push for a 6th seed or maybe even a 5th seed.
Yeah, they had an over-under 34.5 when I was getting some over-unders to start this year. And I was like, that's so low. The roster on paper just looked good to me. You know, a mix of some good young guys, really good player in Beal, and some glue guys like KCP that I thought would just bring it all together pretty well. So that was one of my firmest overs. And now with 77 games to go, they're only 30 out. So they only got to go 30 and 47 the rest of the way to hit that. I think there's a pretty good chance that they're going to. So they were a little underrated to me coming into this year. Another guy who I think was underrated in that trade, as we saw the other night, and really the last two nights. I don't know if you expected him to be this good for Washington so far. It was Montrezl Harrell, who was a sixth man of the year candidate with the Clippers. Had a good season with the Lakers, even though he wasn't really a fit for what they wanted to do defensively out there. But I look back at his last couple of years, just in terms of plus minus, he's obviously a phenomenal offensive player, struggles defensively with his size and just his pick and roll defense. But he manages to be a positive player when you look at the net rating through pretty much every year of his career. And when Daniel Gafford went down with that scary injury in Boston, he pretty much assumed that full-time center role. And I'm saying, all right, got to take this guy off the floor, throw him in some pick and rolls, get him moving on defense and make it hard for Washington to even play him. But he held his own out there and he was so aggressive and assertive on offense that it really just threw the Celtics off with how physical he was. He took Rob Williams out of the game on the switches and backline cuts. He was just destroying the Celtics. And he obviously ended up having a 25-11 game, I believe. And they never really had to take him out for defensive purposes. It's pretty amazing what he's been able to do so far with Washington. Has it exceeded your expectations?
I think it maybe slightly, but I really thought he was going to have a big year. You know, 2 years ago, he was the sixth man of the year with the Clippers, averaging 19 points a game. He's always been a high efficiency guy. I've just personally always loved his game ever since he came into the league. I mean, he was a late draft pick, undersized, but is made up for it with heart, hustle, energy, effort. He's just a guy who always has played with an edge every single night. And he shoots a high percentage. He's a decent rebounder, but he can just score. I mean, he's automatic around the rim. He's shooting like 90-something percent within 3 feet, going up against generally bigger players. But there'll be three guys on him, and he'll dunk it over them, you know, like he did that last night against the Atlanta Hawks. So Montrezl Harrell, I've always liked the way he plays, and it's been really impressive how he's carried that throughout his career, because it's one thing when you come in and you're overlooked in the draft and then you get your second contract and all of a sudden you're rich. And, you know, some guys lose that edge, but he still has it. And maybe it helps the fact that he considers last year sort of a lost season with the Lakers. He was with the Clippers. People made a big deal about him joining the NBA defending champion Lakers, and it just didn't work out. They didn't really utilize him the way he thought he should be used. So he's coming in now. It's a contract year, and he's got even more motivation than he usually plays with. So Montrezl Harrell has been an absolute revelation for the Wizards so far. He's been arguably their best player because Bradley Beal up until last night was off to a bit of a slow start. And it's been remarkable to see just how quickly he's grown connected to the area and Wizards fans. He mentioned this right away in his introductory press conference, but it makes sense. Started his career in Houston, went to LA, played for both teams. Now he's in Washington. It's by far the closest he's ever played to home, which is in North Carolina. He's from Tarboro, North Carolina. He's got family at games. He drives home sometimes, you know, whenever there's time off. He feels like he's playing at home, and he feels like he's playing in a city with a lot of people that represent what he represents. You know, he's kind of just immediately connected with Wizards fans, and I'm not sure I've ever seen – I've been following this team for my entire life. I don't know if I've ever seen a player, like, immediately become a fan favorite to the degree that he has. He might be every Wizards fan's favorite player right now.
I love that celebration too. He finishes to Rob and does the slow flex right in front of the Garden crowd. That was so good. He's a real great energy player. He always has been. And you know, there's some defensive concerns when we talk about the Wizards being built for the playoffs. He's a guy that you probably have some questions about in that aspect, but I did see him hitting it off with Bradley Beal on the podium. And Beal's happiness in Washington is one of the big topics in the NBA. They haven't been great since the Wall thing fell apart. Been more of a mid-level team. And really, you know, on paper, even though their record's great, they do kind of rate as like a 15th or so, maybe slightly above that ranked team in terms of net rating to start this year. But he just seems happy with what's going on here. The moves, he's hitting it off with some of these new guys and just has been so comfortable in Washington. And we'll ultimately see if he does sign this massive extension that he's eligible to sign this offseason. There's a lot of talk that he's going to do that from multiple different people that I've talked to and heard from so far. Does feel like he's going to go in that direction. So when people on the outside look at Bradley Beal's situation here, they're like, all right, why is he so attached to this? You've heard like different rumblings of maybe he'll request a trade. Maybe this will be the year he forces his way out of there. But there's never anything coming from him that would make you think that he's going to push his way out of there. It's just constantly his happiness with the city, living there, and the team. And where do you think that stems from?
Well, there were a few cracks in it this offseason leading up to the draft. The reports that came out were true. You know, I confirmed them. I reported some of it myself. And he's confirmed it twice in press conferences, public settings, saying that he was pondering his future a little bit. I think it was more serious than it's ever been. You know, he was a little bit thrown off with how long the Wizards coaching search took. But they made it up to him. I think he loves Wes Unseld Jr. now. I think he loves the offseason they had. And they've given him what he's wanted, I think, for a long time, which is a team that complements his strengths. And they overcome his weaknesses a little bit. You know, they can put four defensive-minded players on the floor with him so that he doesn't have to do too much on that end. He doesn't have to take on the toughest defensive assignments. They've got scoring depth. They've got shooting, so there's more space. There's more shot makers, so he doesn't have to score 30, 35 points a night for them to win. He also doesn't have to play 38 minutes anymore for them to win. He can sort of rest his legs a little bit and late in games do more damage. So I think Bradley Beal really likes the direction that the team is heading in. You know, I interviewed I talked to his agent, Mark Bartlestein, in leading up to the season, and he reiterated that. And the offer's on the table, and at this point, I think the odds are definitely increasing that he signs it, because I don't know what else Bradley Beal would want at this point. This is what he's said he wanted the whole time. This is the place he wants to win, and now he's winning here. They're off to a great start. He really enjoys playing with his teammates. Montrezl Harrell and him have become really fast friends. So I think Bradley Beal, things are working very, very positively for him. And I think it's the direction he wants to go. And, you know, even if they were off to a slow start, there'd be reasons for him to want to sign. You know, he could make a lot more money signing with this team than he can elsewhere. And he's only 28. You know, you look at Damian Lillard and some of these guys who have forced their way out. Generally, they do that in their early 30s. You know, of course, some players have, you know, had a wandering eye much earlier than that. But Bradley Beal's only 28. You know, he could sign this deal, set himself up to be unbelievably wealthy for many, many generations. He already is, but, you know, even more so. And then if things don't work out, then maybe he could arrive at that decision a couple years from now. I don't see why he would be in any rush this organization, given how much he loves it here. And, you know, I think it also needs to be noted that I think he just loves living in Washington, D.C. He's got two kids. I think he sees it as a great place to raise them. So right now, there's a lot of positives for Bradley Beal when it comes to the Wizards.
I love Washington. And every time I go, like, I think that kind of hits people that haven't been there, maybe spent much time there when we have this Beal discussion, is that I can see why he really likes living there and having the family there and just being there in that city. It's a great place to be. I think it goes underrated that's a very black city too. You know, like, that's probably a place that he fits in and feels comfortable in that degree. I think that goes underrated in the conversation. Obviously, it's second to basketball. The basketball thing falls apart with the organization, then you start to look elsewhere. But they've been stable and competitive enough, I think, for it all to come together and be his organization, which I think is a factor too, just him being the number one guy and everything revolving around him there too. Some guys like that. Is the Jason Tatum thing, because this is such a big thing in Boston, and it was this offseason too, as you started to see it come together here. you know, the Celtics being able to make a trade for a max guy down the line somewhere here, initially opening up max space the way they structured their moves to start this offseason, and then lining themselves up for trade flexibility in the future. There's an obsession in Boston about Bradley Beal coming and teaming up with Jason Tatum, and it's probably resonates nationally. It's that loud here that it's probably heard in Washington, and I just wonder how the fan base, the people in Washington, react to this notion in Boston that it's almost a given that Beal's going to end up coming and playing with Tatum one day.
Well, I think that's part of the upside and the upshot to the Wizards starting out well, is that Wizards fans, those rumors can quiet down a little bit. You know, of course, it's not only Boston. So I think Wizards fans are probably used to it. Bradley Beal's used to it because you see other fan bases feel very similarly. The Miami Heat, they got a lot of fans who are really good at Photoshop and have all sorts of images of him in a Miami Heat uniform. And it was so funny when the NBA 75 video came out, because Bradley Beal, they had him dress up as Ray Allen, and he was actually in a Miami Heat jersey, which was so funny. I'm sure you guys saw some funny memes with Jason Tatum in a Lakers jersey, but
yeah, that set some people off.
Yeah. So maybe someday those guys, you know, end up playing together. Obviously we thought it was going to happen with Team USA, and then Bradley Beal got COVID. So we'll see if it ever happens in the NBA, but with the way things are going in Washington, I can't imagine Jason Tatum's going to leave Boston. So I think that's got to be put on the back burner.
Well, I was going to ask, with the Celtics struggling, maybe there's a reverse dream now going toward Washington, where Tatum ends up going to Washington to play with Beal. That would strike some Celtics.
Yeah, if
fans
any Wizards
the
fans out there know Photoshop, start mocking those up.
Their relationship's so interesting. It's one of those things, and you get these over time where, like, the storyline emerges that they grew up together, they were good friends, and you know, they kind of follow each other's footsteps through high school there, a couple of years removed. It just sort of took on a life of its own. And I almost wonder if there's, like, other comparisons to that over the years. I guess Dwayne Wade and LeBron to some degree back in the day, and that came to fruition. Melo and LeBron now, all these years later out of that 03 draft. But that's, like, one of the, I guess, cliche stories in the NBA right now, is just how close they are, how inevitable it seems that they're going to end up playing together down the line. And you do see it, like, they were talking to each other after the game. They got the same trainer there in Drew Hanlon. You see the workout videos that they do together. There's obviously a closeness between them, but people have taken it to this next level where, like, it almost seems like a lot that they're going to play together one day. And there still really isn't that straight path to that eventually happening, just because of how set in they are with both of their franchises right now.
Yeah, maybe it'll have to be a LeBron and Melo situation where they're, you know, in their mid-30s, mm-hmm. and times have changed and their careers have already played out to a certain degree. But yeah, it doesn't look like it's going to happen anytime soon. But it is a remarkable story. I mean, these guys are both from St. Louis. They're from the same neighborhood. They went to the same high school. You know, their jerseys are retired by the same high school. Their parents, their families know each other really, really well. It's just incredible that two guys from the exact same area, same high school, are NBA All-Stars. They started the All-Star game together, and they were playing with Team USA, at least in exhibition games together. Unfortunately, it didn't happen in Tokyo because Bradley Beal didn't go. But it's a remarkable story that I think some fans you see on Twitter are, like, tired of hearing about. But each time it, like, goes up another level, you feel like you have to write about it, right? Because these guys, they consider themselves like brothers, and they have great things to say about each other. And I've written the story many times, but, you know, you got to write it when they're starting the All-Star game together. And then when they're on Team USA, you got to write that too, because, you know, is there a parallel? I don't know. I mean, childhood friends, best friends, making it all the way to that point together. I mean, it's just absolutely unbelievable. Put yourself in their shoes if you can. Obviously, it's not easy to relate to what they do, but just imagine you and, you know, your best friend growing up being on Team USA together.
Yeah. No, it's incredible. And what I love and I really do appreciate most is when they go at each other. Unfortunately, they have the chance to do it multiple times a year in these Wizards-Celtics matchups. There was this great game last year, I'm sure you remember, in an empty TD Garden, where they were just going tit for tat. I don't remember how many points exactly they combined for in that game, but Beal had this incredible first half, had this icing bucket down the stretch, and then Tatum went right back at him, you know, swung by him in the post, hit this game-tying and one, sliding to the ground. And they just had this incredible duel in Boston. And what sticks out to me about these guys, because, you know, Beal's not the best defender in the world, but he really knows Tatum's game, and he defends Tatum about as well as anybody I've seen out there. He stays low, he gets under him, he disrupts him at the dribble level, and you can just tell that these guys have been working so much together on their respective moves that they almost know each other's tendencies, and it's allowed Beal to get a leg up in this matchup in particular, and they've just had some incredible games. I know Beal was injured in that play-in game a year ago, and that really took the air out of that one, but that one in Boston, probably in April of last year, I want to say, maybe mid-March, was just one of my favorite games from last year, watching them go back and forth. They're really fun fun matchup individually.
Yeah, I think it was in late February, actually. I looked this That's up right, the other yeah. day. Yeah, because it was really interesting to see how the Wizards defended Tatum in the first matchup that we saw the other night this season, because in that game, I remember the Wizards went up, and Bradley Beal hit a big shot with about a minute to go, and he kind of like went down the court, like holding his arms out like an airplane.
And it looked like it was over then, yeah.
And they ended up losing, and they lost in part because they had no one to protect the rim. This was before Daniel Gafford arrived. And Bradley Beal tried to guard Jason Tatum in the final minute. I remember Tatum getting to the rim three different times, just like playing bully ball and getting to the rim. And it was one of those moments last year where it really illustrated that the Wizards did not have enough size at the three position. They didn't have enough wing defenders, and they were just simply small at the three. So in the offseason, they added a bunch of size and a bunch of defense at the three. They got Kyle Kuzma, who can do that, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, who can do that. Denny Avdia is now healthy, and now they have a rim protector in Daniel Gafford. So going into that matchup, I was thinking, okay, well, they don't have to put Bradley Beal, who's 6'3", on Jason Tatum, who is 6'8", or some people say he's now 6'10", right?
Yep.
But sure enough, Bradley Beal was the guy guarding him again. So I thought that was really interesting. And obviously, the Wizards ended up defending Tatum pretty well. If you look at the tracking numbers, he played pretty well against Bradley Beal, but KCP and Denny Avdia combined to hold him and Jaylen Brown, actually, to 4-for-14 from the field. So those guys deserve a lot of credit for what happened. And obviously, Daniel Gafford left that game with an injury. But the Wizards, a lot has changed about their defense since, especially when Gafford's healthy. I mean, he's developing into one of the best rim protectors in the league. They now have wing defenders. But it was just fascinating to see Wes Unseld Jr., a new coach, too, to go right back to Bradley Beal. And I wonder if there was a pregame conversation where Bradley Beal says, hey, I want him. And sometimes when your star does that, especially, you know, this early in the regular season, you got to let him give it a shot.
Statistically last year, I'm sure you've looked at the numbers, Beal, at least when I looked at it last year, was one of the better guys just in terms of individual matchup numbers against Tatum. I think at one point he was holding Tatum 38% in the individual matchups last year. So it'll be interesting to look at that number after these two games here. Celtics and Wizards back at it in Washington this time, 5 o'clock Eastern on Saturday. We'll obviously have post-game coverage here on CLNS Media. Then hop into some of the other matchups to start next week. But as you look around the East, Chase, this East is going to be grueling. It's going to be like these kind of games every single night, it feels like, which is going to be really fun. The league's been awesome to start this year. But as we look at the different teams, Bulls, Knicks last night, grueling matchup. Bulls just looking overmatched, even undefeated. Yeah. And, you know, I was in MSG opening night, seeing the Knicks and the energy of that crowd and just how they reacted to Kemba being back and the belief that they have in that team after last year's playoff run. Amazing. The Nets are the Nets. The Bucks are the Bucks. That's a given. But the Cavs have been surprising. You just go up and down. Like, there's good teams everywhere in this conference. And it feels like for teams in this conference, there's not going to be a night off. You know, Wizards get the Hawks, then it's the Celtics again. Celtics got the Bulls on Monday right after this matchup. It's just going to be grueling. And really, the only teams you look at that are probably going to be walkthroughs are Detroit and Orlando. Who sticks out to you as a surprise in these so far, I guess? And who do you think is going to be legit among some of these hot starters? And teams that probably were expected to do well, like the Heat, I'd say, have been pretty solid after being expected to be solid this year.
I would say the Hornets are a little surprising. I mean, obviously, you saw a lot of potential for them last season with LaMelo Ball immediately looking like a star in this league. And I thought that they would be better. I didn't think that they would start 4-1. Mm-hmm. And I didn't think LaMelo would make this type of leap right away. I mean, he is unbelievable. He looks like he's going to end up being an all-NBA player.
Miles Bridges looks amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, he looks great. I mean, things are clicking for them. It's just been one big best case scenario for them. Same thing with the Bulls, who I thought also had a chance to improve. The Wizards, you could put in that category. There's some teams that are struggling that I think are really talented. Like Toronto's got a lot of talent.
Their defense has been incredible.
Yeah, Scotty Barnes looks really, really good, and you add him to all the players that they already have. The Pacers are really talented, and they've got Rick Carlisle. They're 1-4, but that's not an easy out. So it's definitely the deepest the East has been in a long, long time. Now, what could change the complexion of things is if the top tier doesn't get things in shape. You know, Philly obviously is working through a disaster with Ben Simmons. Brooklyn, you know, I don't think that like Kyrie Irving is like an indispensable piece for them, but clearly they're not off to a great
start. They got a weird Harden thing going on too.
Yeah, that too. So if like one of those teams or if both of those teams aren't as good as we think they are, then okay, maybe the West could top to bottom ultimately end up being the better conference. But the depth, and you know, that would affect teams like the Wizards and the Celtics. That's going to, I think, be a factor for sure. It's going to be harder to make the playoffs than it has been in a long time. It's going to be more competitive than ever to get home court advantage. And of course you want to stay in the top six because of the play-in tournament.
Yes.
Atlanta looks better, you know, going into the game they lost against the Wizards. It was the second night of a back-to-back, but they were top eight in the offensive and defensive efficiency. You know, some of their young players are continuing to improve. They look like a team that went to the conference finals and surprised people, but came back ready to prove that that was absolutely legit. So I don't know like who I would pick to be in the conference finals at this point to meet. I would say Milwaukee's going to be there, but I don't know who's going to meet them. I still think Milwaukee's the best team in the East. I think Giannis is the best player in the NBA. So I think over time, the cream's going to rise to the top. But as for what happens after them, until Brooklyn or Philly gets their act together, you know, who knows, man? Maybe like the Wizards or the Celtics could get a much higher seed than we thought going in. There might be an opening for a team to surprise and, you know, maybe be the third team in the East. I'm not saying that the Wizards are going to be that high, but who knows, man? You know, I think it's much more jumbled, and these teams are a lot closer together than I thought they were going
to
be.
And there's a mixed reaction to that play-in format, especially last year with where teams ended up and frustration over, you know, having to play a whole season and losing one game, possibly knocking you out. But you look at it this year, you know, yes, it's harder to make the playoffs than ever before, but it's easier than ever to be in the playoff picture than ever before. Only five teams are going to get knocked out outright. Two of them will obviously probably end up being Orlando and Detroit. Maybe Indiana, if they keep sliding, ends up in that, you know, bottom three as well. So that leaves 10 spots for 12 competitive teams. And, you know, you do want to stay out of that play-in tournament. But if you squeeze in there and win two games, all of a sudden you're in, you're facing one of the higher seeds. But with how even everything looks to start this year, maybe it's a more manageable matchup than it would be in a year where the conference is more top-heavy. I still think Brooklyn and Milwaukee, like you said, probably end up going up to the top there, floating and, you know, asserting themselves with the rushes that they have. But we'll see. Like, you know, we've seen some weird starts to start seasons before, teams that you don't expect to be as good, rising to the top early on and having that good first month and then eventually settling down. But on paper this year, you went in and said this conference looks pretty even, pretty competitive, and it's playing out that way. Like, there was actually an expectation of that, and it's playing out, and I think it might be sustainable. So I'm thrilled to see more of these Wizards-Celtics games, Celtics-Bulls, Celtics-Knicks. Like, all these different games, and from the Wizards' perspective, too, against these teams, are going to be really fun to watch night in and night out. So appreciate you being here, Chase. We'll welcome you back again soon, maybe if there's a playoff series between these two teams. And great to finally get to meet you and know you a little bit here on Dome Theory.
Absolutely, man. You too. Let's do it again. Thanks for having me on. Yeah.